Hey, what do you think you're playing at? Come here. Take it from me. Be smart. Be safe.
And welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellon.
Hello.
Ah, well, what are we going to talk about this week, I wonder?
Fireworks.
Fireworks. Well, it is fireworks night.
It is fireworks night.
It is fireworks night. And actually, we should talk about fireworks because we could send out some much-needed public information warnings about fireworks and about firework safety for all our international listeners, because obviously they need it more than anyone.
They certainly do.
But really, I mean, I suppose there's only one thing to talk about. Everyone's going to be talking about VAR, aren't they?
Mm.
We're not going to be talking about VAR. Don't worry.
No, that's good.
Don't worry. Well, I tell you what, if you've got on your podcast player, if you've got one of those little buttons that takes you forward 30 seconds, perhaps tap that now so we can all get it out the way right now. So we'll just have a little discussion about VAR for 30 seconds, but feel free to tap it and come back to us afterwards, okay? Right, it's rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah, shit.
It's shit.
Yeah.
It's shit. It needs to be binned. Get rid of it.
Yeah.
It's
get in rubbish. The bin right now.
Yes.
Yeah. That's our nuanced take, isn't it?
If I had a car that was that bad at being a car, I'd take it outside and set it on fire.
Yeah.
I think they want to get rid of it.
If it was a car, we buy any car, wouldn't buy it.
Yeah.
We buy any VAR. No.
No.
There's a t-shirt coming up right there, isn't there?
And all the people who skipped it won't even know about that. So they can't even beat us to
learn. Yeah.
Right, okay. They'll be back there now.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Classic Terry, classic.
Yes.
I pity the fool who missed that gag.
Yeah. Oh, dear. We're never going to hit that high again this episode,
nope,
are we?
That was it. You can bury me where I am right now.
Look, if we're not going to be talking about what everybody else is talking about, we're going to have to find something else. Now, there have been a couple of big things in the news, but you wouldn't notice it because everyone is just talking about that, aren't they?
Mm.
But one thing we did want to discuss actually this week was coming back to something we discussed a few weeks ago during the last international break, and we've got another international break coming up soon, which hopefully will be just us talking about the end of the qualification process for Euro 2020, which will lead us on to our podcast at the end of the month, which I know Jan's going to get very, very excited about.
It's a fake draw!
It's a fake draw, Jan.
It's a fake draw. It's a fake draw.
It's a fake draw on the week of Jan's birthday as well.
Oh, my God.
So it's a week of week, isn't it?
Yeah, that's going to be too much.
That is a lot of week.
We've got fake draw number 6 for us. This is going to be. And this one is going to be a real doozy as well, because it's just ridiculously complicated.
Excellent.
You're like a pig in shit, aren't you, Graham?
Yes. You know me, you know how I love a complicated draw.
Yeah.
And you know how much I love going through all those notes that UEFA bring out, all their little PDFs that they bring out, explaining it in simple terms. Oh, yeah, I love all that. I don't think I've got enough pins or little scrubby pads to actually sort this all out. It's going to be quite something. But yeah, that's going to be at the end of the month. But of course, we've got another round of international fixtures to come. Obviously, the last round was marred by the horrible incidents that happened in Bulgaria with the Bulgarian fans. And UEFA had come to a decision last week, didn't they, Terry? And what did they decide to do?
They've fined the Bulgarian FA €75,000 and ordered two matches to be held behind closed doors.
Well, it's only one of them is actually going to happen, is it? One of them is suspended.
Oh, right, suspended behind closed doors.
Yeah, so that's dependent. If there's more trouble, then it will.
Okay, so if there's more trouble in the game that's being played behind closed doors?
In any game over the next 2 years.
Oh, I see. So they could say, well, look, if there's more trouble, then we'll do another one. And that's it. And I think we can say that is it. That's all they've done.
Mm. Yeah. Of course, there has been a lot of people who have been saying, that's rubbish. Jan, is that rubbish?
Well, the sanction hits the Bulgarian FA.
Yeah.
Artist. but actually the perpetrators of that, and previous perpetrators as well, because this isn't just those idiots that turned up that night. They're the ones that seem to get away scot-free. They'll probably get a slap on the wrist and be away with it, really.
This is the second time that they've been up before UEFA with a charge of racism or racist fans. And so they are going to have one game behind closed door, which will cost them about €500,000 in missed out revenue if they got a full house against the Czech Republic. But they have been warned before. There has been two incidents. UEFA has said that they've only got one racism incident against them. The other one was a political incident where they unfurled a banner, which was probably for a right-wing organisation, which was probably behind the problems that we saw in the last game. Terry, what do you think about the whole thing?
I tend to agree with my colleague and friend Chris, who suggested on another podcast that this would be an opportunity for UEFA to take a firm hand with Bulgaria and actually throw them out of the competition.
Mm.
They're kind of in the process of throwing themselves out of the competition anyway because they're rubbish. But I think that it would have been a good opportunity to set a precedent because there's no extra damage to be done to them because they're not going to be qualifying for Euro 2020. But to chuck them out of the competition at least just sort of sets a precedent and is, I think, a gesture to say, look, you know, you're not going to play the remainder of these games. And I wonder whether or not, you know, they could have gone further and said, look, we're going to throw you out of this competition and you're also barred from the Nations League.
Yeah.
And you can only play, you know, friendly matches from now until, you know, the World Cup qualifiers and do that. And that, I think, would have been a pretty firm statement. And I think that not just Bulgaria, but, you know, other nations would then have to sit up and pay attention. The difficulty for UEFA, and when I say difficulty, I'm not suggesting for a moment I have any sympathy for them, but the difficulty is that when one of the larger federations, one of the more powerful federations, let's say just plucking any name out of the air, let's say Italy, let's say some of their fans, and it should be said Italian national team fans are usually very, very moderate and well-meaning and well-mannered and not all their hooligans are club-based and not national team. So I am literally plucking them out of the air. It could actually more realistically be England.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, let's say that there was a concerted effort by that. It's unlikely because our security is very, very tight. But if one of the big federations got themselves into that kind of trouble, then, of course, the precedent's been set. And they say, well, if you kicked Bulgaria out, that means you have to kick England out. Or let's say like a bunch of German neo-Nazis infiltrate an away game during the Nations League, in the next Nations League campaign during a German national team game. Mm. Then where do we go there?
Yeah.
Where would we go from there? What would actually happen? I think Germany are hosting the next Euros, aren't they, after this one?
Yeah.
This is the problem from their point of view, is that if it's all very well kicking the little guys. Mm. But I mean, if you once you set precedent, then you then have to presumably apply that to the bigger federations as well, which are much more lucrative and will cost UEFA stacks more money. So it is a problem for them to know what to do.
Mm. We did suggest at the time, and I mean, obviously it was actually happening while we were recording.
It was.
So we couldn't really come up with anything too thoughtful. But we did say at the time that if the perpetrators of this wanted disruption, if they wanted the people that they're trying to talk to, trying to encourage to think along their lines, to be the victims, i.e. like that Bulgaria is being ganged up against by everyone else. Is this playing into their hands?
Yeah, it definitely is. And I'm not even sure that even going as far as Terry suggested is actually going to fix the problem. Because all that happens when you ban Bulgaria, in this case, from any kind of competition or fine them a few quid, is that the federation gets punished. The reality is that this isn't going to fix the problem. The problem is racism in society. Mm. And banning Bulgaria is not going to stop racism in Bulgaria's society, just like it wouldn't stop racism in British society. It didn't stop hooliganism when English clubs got thrown out of Europe. It's not as prevalent as it was, but it hasn't gone away, has it?
Ooh.
So I'm just wondering whether that any sporting organisation has got any teeth when it comes to this, because they can't dictate government policy. They can try and influence society's views, but that's all they're going to do is influence, and I'm not really sure that that they have got the means to solve this problem. And as well as that, I was reading today in World Soccer's really good article on this very subject, which was really concerning, is that the team in UEFA that look into disciplining federations for racist behaviour also look at things like pyrotechnics and also look at football kit infractions and bad stewarding and things like that. So there's no one committee looking at racism.
Right.
They look at any misdemeanor concerning how football is governed and administered.
So this is the same group that is checking that you haven't got poppies on and things like that.
Yeah.
Or presumably that you're not wearing branded apparel in designated areas, breaching UEFA's sponsorship rules.
There's been criticism over their Equal Game initiative, which is supposed to be a far-reaching attempt to stamp out racism in football. But the truth is, it was certainly the journalist that wrote the article was saying this looked at racism across all of football, right the way down to walking football and some of the grassroots women's game, which is important, but possibly not where they should be pointing their guns. Mm. So it's almost like it was the insinuation was that it was watered down. Then you add to that how the discipline is handled and how that's watered down as well. Then you've probably got a recipe for a fairly ineffective policy, which is why we're probably seeing what we're seeing, because there's no bite to it.
Is that right, Terry? Is this going to actually have any effect?
I doubt very much it will have any effect on the Nazis who perpetrated the interventions. And I'm inclined to agree with Jan that if anything, it might, I think the implication from what Jan was saying is that in fact it might give them more fuel because, you know, they could maybe take advantage of any sentiment that they're being scapegoated or being picked on in Bulgaria. I mean, on my personal view, you're right. I mean, UEFA can't stop Nazis from happening, but what they can do, and all the federation can do, is they can say that we don't want Nazis in our game and we will take drastic action. I've been quite interested to see that some, like recently, I think in Romania, for example, they had a behind closed doors game against Norway, I think. And you can get round this by only inviting children and obviously with adults to supervise them. This is being described in some quarters as a loophole, but I don't think it's a loophole at all. I think if anything, it's designed to encourage federation say, well, yeah, okay, why don't we just leave the men behind and then just like get these kids in? And the atmosphere was amazing, apparently, in the stadium. Mm-hmm. And Romania played really, really well. And I mean, I'd like to see a little bit more of proactive punishments going on as well. I don't think it's necessary. I think on the one hand, you say, look, we're kicking you out of the competition because your fans are a disgrace. And you've done nothing about it or doing very little about it. And although we can't intervene on the Bulgarian government policy, but your government's not doing anything about it either. And so we're just like throwing you out of the competition. I said, you can continue to play friendly games and we will allow you to play them, but you must only bring children or women and children in. I know that sounds sexist. I'm sure women are quite capable of being Nazis as well. But it certainly reach outside the current demographic, yeah. Bring new people in. And this, I think, are lessons that we could all learn in everywhere, not just in places like Bulgaria. And just to demonstrate that these things can be done, or play the games on Wednesday morning or something like that, you know, to appeal to a different demographic. I mean, I think there are things you can do that are a lot more proactive and constructive than just simply finding them holding a game behind closed doors, because I just don't think it really makes any difference. And ultimately, punishes the innocent fans as well.
Bringing kids into the game, instead of having you know, riotous adults in there, actually it starts the education, doesn't it?
Yes.
It says you can go to a football match and it can be lovely and really enjoyable and you don't have to feel intimidated because you've got fascists standing next to you.
Yes.
Yeah. Could really change it for tomorrow.
Now, today is, in Britain anyway, it's fireworks night on the launch day of this podcast. You're probably listening to it at some other time during the week or in a couple of weeks' time, like a lot of people seem to do. I don't know why. Maybe they'll just like listening to our takes when they're cooled down a bit.
Lukewarm takes.
Yeah, maybe our takes are just a bit too hot for
you think?
When they come out on the Tuesday. I'm not ready for this. So maybe I can cope with this on a Friday or a Saturday morning. Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, I can cope with it then. But whenever you listen, Tuesday was fireworks night. Now, we've grown up with fireworks. When we grew up in the 70s as kids, we were told what fireworks were and how dangerous they were, weren't we?
We were.
We were taught to fear fireworks, weren't we? Even now, as a 50-year-old man, if I was to go and buy fireworks, I'd have to adopt a responsible adult voice to actually do it.
Yeah.
I'd say, can I have some fireworks, please? I'd look furtively around in case anyone.
You'd probably turn up in a suit, wouldn't you? Yeah, with a tie on.
Yeah. And a hat.
Yes, I'm very responsible.
I can assure you that I'm not two people standing on top of each other. No, I am an actually an adult. If I bought fireworks, I would have to hold them in both hands, but at arm's length. Just like. Look out towards the car.
And I drive very slowly back home.
Yes, just in case they exploded in my car.
Yeah. The reason why we have this respect for fireworks is obviously because we had it drilled into our head on television every November and most of October as well about fireworks and about how something bad was going to happen. It was like bad things were going to happen if you played with the frisbee near a pylon.
The electricity board warns children to keep away from substations. Never try to get toys back yourself. Otherwise, you may not live to play with them again.
Bad things were going to happen if you put a rug on a polished wood floor.
Polish a floor, put a rug on it. You might as well set a man trap.
Yeah, bad things were going to happen if you didn't behave yourself around fireworks.
Yeah.
Even a sparkler can be dangerous if you don't take care. A sparkler stays hot even when it's out. Make sure your child doesn't start November the 6th. Like this.
And when I fry chips, I've always got a wet tea towel.
Wet tea towel.
On hand.
It's worth it, as a little side note, particularly for international listeners, do look up on YouTube public information film for children from the 1970s. They are terrifying. They are designed to scare the shit out of spotty, ignorant 70s teenage boys like us. My God, did it work?
But it worked.
Yeah.
To you, it's just a worn-out fridge. But to a child, it's a caravan, a ship, a castle, even a bed. And a death trap, airtight and impossible to open from the inside. Don't let an old fridge be a new danger to children. Ask your local council to take it away before it kills a child.
Yeah. They were gruesome.
It's why we've got this whole culture of health and safety now. It's nothing to do with the EU. It's all homegrown. There is more health and safety in Britain than there is anywhere else in the world. I think it's probably because we are the biggest exporter of warning signs, I think.
Yeah. Yes. And also because we're just hopeless and can't look after ourselves. I think it's well documented that we can't make decisions and be responsible for ourselves.
Now, we're telling you this, international listeners, because we don't have to tell our British listeners all about this. They know how deadly fireworks are.
Deadly.
Yeah, they'll be cowering behind their sofas now, won't they?
Yeah, I know, exactly.
They're talking about fireworks. Stop talking about fireworks.
And yet, Terry, what happened in Berlin at the weekend?
During the Berlin Derby, there's always pyro in the big Derby games, and there was pyro there. And the pyro comes in the shape of flares, so things get really smoky and very, very... Well, of whatever colour it is, so red and blue in this instance. But
deeply
irresponsible,
by the way, because if there was a genuine emergency somewhere that you needed a flare for, where are the emergency services going to know where to go?
Yeah, absolutely. If you needed to send...
Where's the Coast Guard
going to
go?
If you needed to send... Where is the Coast Guard going to go in Berlin, for example?
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, yes... That's a good question. Probably one for another time, but I'll show you a map and then you can see where the nearest ocean is and realise that that's not the most pertinent question to ask at this time. So it was all very vivid, but this was a very, very bad-tempered game. This was the first Bundesliga game between Union and Hertha. It was the first Bundesliga game between any team from West Berlin and East Berlin in the top flight, and it was a very bad-tempered affair off the pitch, I should say. There was a lot of unpleasantness. There was one occasion when the Union fans unveiled a pretty obnoxious homophobic banner, which had to be taken down, aimed at Hertha fans. And there was also a bizarre but equally unsavoury moment when some Union fans felt that they wanted to run across the pitch to battle the Hertha fans. And the Union Berlin goalkeeper single-handedly held them back. He literally threw them back. And they all realised that he was not a man to cross and dutifully went back like good lads to their terraces. So these are very serious matters. But also some Hertha fans started firing rockets into the Union section of the the stadium. Well, it was in Union Stadium, so most of the... But apparently, Kit Holden, who was at the game, who reported on the Talking Fußball podcast, he said that they actually, these rockets were going into the family enclosure at Union Stadium. And mercifully, there were no injuries, but, I mean, it was terrible. I mean, actually, during the heavily sanitised Bundesliga highlights of the game, and understandably sanitised, there was one goalmouth incident which they had to include, and you could see them shooting a rocket and bouncing off the top of the stand and then back into this section of the stadium. And needless to say, the German media reaction has been pretty dark, and the feeling is that this has crossed a line. Pyro is a controversial subject in Germany. People vigorously defend it and people vigorously attack it. But actually, you know, shooting rockets into other sections of the stadium is, you know, that's another level of fan culture. And I would imagine that there may even be stadium bans there. Certainly heavy fines.
German football is the envy of a lot of people for the passion of its support. It's very difficult when you've got something like that to keep it in check or to decide what you think is an acceptable level and what other people obviously think is an acceptable level. And we've seen this going back for years over in our culture as well, be it the songs you sing or the chants you make and how you just generally behave. What was your immediate opinion yourself as somebody who watches German football on what actually happened there?
I was pretty disgusted with firing rockets.
Yeah.
My view on pyro is that I would not use pyro. I would not want to be any part of the stadium where pyro is being used. But I don't have any objections to fans using pyro, as long as it's understood that if they injure themselves, it's tough shit. You're the ones who are using the pyro. And I think to a degree, if you choose to sit in certain sections of the stadium or stand in certain sections of the stadium where you know pyro is being used, then you enter at your own risk. And if you get burnt, then tough tits, mate. You know, that's the call you've made. When you start laying it on other people in other parts of the stadium where they have chosen to enjoy their football in a different way, then that's definitely crossing a line. And, you know, firing rockets into enclosure where there's children, that's just bang out of order. Mm. Now, I mean, I'm certain that there will be certain ultra groups amongst the Hertha fans who will maybe distance themselves from it or will try and qualify what happened and say that perhaps it didn't go down the way they had expected it to. Maybe they might say, well, we weren't expecting it to bounce off the roof and then go into a certain thing. But still, it's a pretty damn irresponsible thing to do. And I don't mean to sound like an old man about it, but I mean, really, you know, that is proper dangerous. Again, I mean, if you want to play amongst yourselves with fireworks, then that's fine. And if you end up getting injured, then, you know, you're taking responsibility for your own actions and you've got no one else to blame but yourself. But I mean, I think when you're including other people in that in dangerous fun, then, well, that's where I think the line has to be crossed. And I think that probably steps need to be taken.
Far be it from me to tell other people how to enjoy their football, but, I mean, fireworks, football, and probably a healthy amount of beer as well.
Well, there is that as well.
Which is, I mean, I like we joke, I mean, I've got a healthy fear of fireworks, but putting it into that cauldron, putting it into that mix, just does not seem right to me. And I know the German football culture has this... pretty much the heart of it, and it is amazing, and it is the envy of the world. But I mean, sometimes you have to say that, you know, people can't make decisions for themselves, they can't be responsible for themselves, and that's a fact. That's why big sporting events are policed. You're right, I think this is probably a watershed moment for them. And I mean, if we remember when we were last at Hertha, you know, I got a good frisking from the security guy, so much so that I had to explain away all of those football cards that your friend Martin had brought along with us. And I had this big wedge of them in my back pocket, and I thought, I'll take them home for my son. And I had to explain to him, my really crap German, why I had this many football cards on me, being a 44-year-old man. But I got in with them. But I'd imagine, what type of conversation would you have with a security guard when you've got a load of flares with you or a rocket? How do you get into the ground?
I mean, I don't know how they get into the ground. I mean, I don't know whether or not security is laxer in certain parts of the stadium as they are. I mean, I had my water bottle taken away when I went to Hertha, you know. I mean, when I came in, because if you remember, I was not well. Yeah. So I had to come along later. Yeah. And I was still rehydrating with a bottle of water and they just took it off me. I had to go and buy me water in there. And I thought, and you just sit thinking, well, I mean, like, you know, if you're that diligent about that, then how on earth, I mean, where do they put these rockets? I mean, that's a rhetorical question. I'm not expecting any speculations as their answer.
Go up pretty well, don't they?
They do, certainly. Well, that's what I've heard. Yeah. You just need to make certain that they're in the correct launch position before setting light to them.
Now, that's one public information film you didn't see.
No. Although I'm sure they probably... There's probably one they did, but they just said, no, we can't air that. It's too graphic.
Yeah. Yeah, I can just imagine John Pertwee saying,
Splink!
Seriously. Listeners, seriously, go to YouTube and look at them. They're terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
Tony, do you have any concept of what level of self-policing there is amongst the fan groups in Germany when something like this happens?
Well, I think that's a good question. I think that the problem is that people are quite entrenched in their views by now.
Yeah.
And I think that the difficulty is that it will be harder for the ultra groups to self-police because, you know, they won't want to appear as if they're giving ground on the argument, even though on this occasion there would appear to be pretty strong evidence that ground does need to be given, I think. It is worth stressing, and I haven't stressed this before, that we're talking about a subsection within a subsection.
Yeah.
We're talking about a certain group of ultras within the larger group of ultras, most of whom are just folk, you know.
Yeah.
Having fun, enjoying themselves, yeah, loud, boisterous, and yes, into their pyro. But I mean, also the ultra groups over in Europe are community outreach projects. They do things, they're more than just going to football stadiums and jumping up and down. They consider themselves to be part of the club and part of the community. And I think it's important to consider this as well when having a conversation about the behaviour of ultras.
Yeah.
You will get people who I think probably had too much to drink or just lack the emotional maturity to cope with, you know, high emotional occasions like this, like the first Berlin derby in the top flight. And it was a... You know, it was a massive, massive occasion. Lots of colours, lots of light, lots of under the floodlights. Well, lots of excitement.
Because they are incredibly organised. I mean, I saw some of the pictures of the flares going off, and it was basically the whole end, wasn't it?
Mm.
At one stage.
I mean, it's brilliant.
Yeah,
it is brilliant to look at. It's amazing. It's just perhaps inherently dangerous. But again, this isn't the conversation. This is about idiots firing rockets.
Children.
I mean, that's
overexcited.
That's completely messed up. Yeah. Yeah, and yes, I mean, the best you could say that's overexcitement, but really, I mean, it's really dickish behaviour.
Yeah, but of course, they weren't the only fireworks that were going on this weekend.
No,
they weren't.
No,
big news in Germany is Bayern are looking for another manager.
They are. Yeah, yeah. They got rid of Niko Kovac. He was sacked yesterday, the day after Bayern lost 5-1 to Eintracht Frankfurt. First time that they had lost 5-1 in a league game for nearly 10 years. And listeners may remember that, actually, because it was the year that Wolfsburg won the league and Wolfsburg beat them 5-1. People might remember Grafitsch's hat-trick, especially that amazing, spectacular individual goal that he scored. And it's been since then that Bayern have lost 5-1. They got done over by, unfortunately, the double jeopardy rule and VAR backfired on them because... Jerome Boateng fouled a Frankfurt attacker and initially a penalty was given. And Jerome Boateng, it was a goal-scoring opportunity.
Yeah.
They'd been denied. And Boateng was given a yellow card under the double jeopardy rule. You don't send off a player and issue a penalty. Yeah. VAR called it back and said, you might want to have a look at that. Look back. Foul happened outside the area. So Bayern avoided the penalty but lost Boateng. And yeah, and then Frankfurt punished them and they lost 5-1 and then Kovac lost his job. It's his since that 7-2 win against Tottenham, he's only won one Bundesliga match in that time.
Wow.
Lost to Hoffenheim, they drew with Augsburg, the very unconvincing win against Union Berlin. And then this game here. And despite the fact that he's an ex-player, and despite the fact that he won the double last season,
I was going to say, isn't it a bit harsh considering he won the double last season?
Sacked, booted out,
sacked at the beginning of November.
I mean it's funny because, as we know, we may be aware that the Bundesliga is very, very fluid at the moment. I mean Bayern Munich are only fourth, but Borussia Dortmund aren't top. It's Mönchengladbach who are top. And so I just think that they've kind of panicked, maybe. And maybe they feel that they'll get somebody in as a caretaker and that will turn them around. But it's, I don't think that Kovac was ever a long-term solution for them, but I'm very surprised that he's gone at this point. But I believe what happened was like, they had a conversation with him and they indicated to him that they wanted him to leave and that they were looking for a replacement, and that Kovac said, well, I'll go now if it's all the same to you. Mm. So it was very much a kind of mutual consent thing, although he has been sacked. But I mean, I think they just had a disagreement about his egress, that's all.
Mm.
So it's a bit of a shame, really, for Kovac. But the criticism of them was that nobody really knew what. These days, you know, you've got to have, like, you know, your own style and philosophy associated with you if you want to be a coach of one of the big clubs. I think that they're struggling with the curse of Guardiola. I think since Pep left, who had such a signature to his football, the Bayern have struggled for some kind of footballing identity. And Kovac has definitely not done that. Good coach, did a great job at Frankfurt, will do a great job at whatever club he goes to next, unless it's Cologne, in which case he'll do a terrible job because everyone does a terrible job there. But but he hasn't got that kind of profile. So the candidates are, currently it's Hansi Flick as caretaker. Candidates are Max Allegri, Arsene Wenger. And Ten Hag.
Yeah. Not Mourinho, then?
Well, I think Mourinho is always in any kind of conversation, but I think that might be a bit of a surprise. But, yeah, I mean, of course it could be. There's no kind of association, I think. And I think they're quite keen on Allegri because I think that they feel culturally closer to Serie A than they do, say, the Premier League.
So what's the word on the Straza then? Are they actually going to try and get someone to for long term rather than see out the rest of the season?
Well, I think I don't know what the word on the Straza is, to be perfectly honest with you. Southern Straza is a very long way from Whiteleaf, sadly. my hearing's not what it was. But I mean, for me, I think if they went for Ten Hag from Ajax in the summertime, because he won't leave before then, that would be a good longer term appointment. Otherwise, then it will be maybe Allegri, and that would be for, well, however long Italian managers tend to last. So they're, what, 18 months or so, and then they'll be looking for someone else, which might actually suit Bayern. You know, they've got some rebuilding to do, and they've got problems. I mean, like, they let Mats Hummels go. On the surface, that seemed like a sensible option because Niklas Süle had done a great job and has settled in there brilliantly into that back four. And he's now, he was the leader of that back line now. But he's done his ACL a couple of weeks ago. He's going to be gone for the rest of the season and may never be back to the way that he was. It's his second ACL tear. It's really, really incredibly sad for him. But, I mean, Kovac's done a good job. He managed that ribbon robbery, you know, Coman-Nabry transition. He'd done it well, but I mean, in many other respects, you know, they're boned without Lewandowski. And that guy gets injured, then they're just going to go backwards because he's the only one who's. I mean, he scores the goal, but I mean, everything works through him. I mean, you just watch Bayern play, and you just try and imagine Lewandowski not in that, and you're just like, yeah, forget it. You know, they're just going to be there. So it's on a bit of a knife edge, and don't think any coach is going to necessarily be able to do that much with that team. So you're probably better off for going for someone like Allegri because he'll be very pragmatic and, you know, very pragmatic Serie A coach. These are your players. Get results. Okay, I'll do that then.
Hmm.
And we'll see what happens. But that's what I would bet on if it was a betting man. I'd bet on Allegri.
Well, this weekend, it's their Klassiker, which I'm sure Terry will tell me doesn't exist. The Bayern are at home to Dortmund. Yeah, extra pressure on that just before the international break starts.
I wrote a chapter of my book is about the Bayern-Dortmund rivalry, and I've called it Der Klassiker, as it happens, but I put it in quotation marks.
Ah, right, of course.
I'm such a dick. yeah, I mean, obviously, not ideal. I mean, they've got a Champions League game, and they play Dortmund in the next round. And Dortmund seems to have gather themselves somewhat as well from their little slump. So that's going to be a cracking game. But it's not the only cracking game, of course, on this weekend.
Well, no, of course. There are plenty of great games to watch. And starts on Friday with Dulwich Hamlet versus Carlisle. Yeah, and well, FA Cup. Shame Leaf aren't there, isn't it?
I know. Could have been ours.
Could have been ours. But yeah, there's going to be coverage from Champion Hill on BBC2. Dulwich Hamlet on BBC2.
Oh, God.
Should have been us.
It could have been us.
Should have really been us. Should have been us. But it's going to be in the box set, along with another, a lot of other games like Forest Derby and the small matter of Liverpool versus Man City. And late on Sunday, there is a glut of games. I haven't actually picked out which one we're going to put on yet, but I think it's going to be Sounders versus Toronto in the MLS Cup final.
Mm.
Because
you won't be watching that. Who watches MLS?
Okay, yeah. Well, not when... Not
but
when,
it is the final, in fairness.
It is final. But yeah. It's on the same time as Betis versus Sevilla.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got to be honest. I'm watching Betis v Sevilla. I'm not going to be watching Sounders v Toronto.
Or Marseille-Lyon.
Or Marseille-Lyon.
Or Juve versus Milan.
I know. It's
there's quite a lot of games. There's all the games on Sunday night. But you can find out what we pick if you subscribe to our newsletter, which is the Weekend Box Set. And if you don't, then you can go to sofpodcast.com and follow the links to the Weekend Box Set. Put your email address in there. Bob's your uncle. It will be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. So you'll find out all of the seven games to take you from Friday to Sunday. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Toby Fellow, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @SoundOfFootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Yes, I wish I didn't keep losing me birds. Then learn to swim, young man. Learn to swim.
If you can't swim, ask about lessons at your local swimming baths. Do learn to swim. It could save your life.